Okay, so let's see.
You remember if I was here, Shabbos?
You were here, Shabbos.
Okay.
Anyway. Okay. So we are holding the middle of Lamed Tes, Amud Aleph. The line begins Lay. It's just about the middle of the Amud. Okay. We said V'chulon Shomen Lahen Ka'aris. We quoted yesterday Braisa that said that in all these cases, we evaluate for the person who's taking care of the field as if he was an artist, so he's going to get a certain percentage. And by the way, I mentioned yesterday, but I didn't go into it in detail, that you have a few different opinions among the Rishonim what that means. Rashi says what it means that we treat him like an artist. So previously, Rashi said actually that it meant that once the owner shows up, then you figure out in for past years, you know, every year an artist in this area gets, let's say, 25%. But fine, each year that the person has been taking care of it, he's going to get 25%. Here on our Amud, actually, Rashi puts it a little bit differently. He may have taken everything, and then he'll reimburse the owner for whatever his portion is supposed to be. Again, if an artist is supposed to get 100%, if an artist is supposed to get stressed out at 25%, he's been taking 100% all this time, so fine, we'll allow him to keep that 100% all this time. Once the guy shows up, he's going to have to repay him for the 75% from each year. Tosfos actually has a different understanding, which is, for the most part, we actually don't treat him like an artist. For the most part, we do say he can get 100% of the payers all the time he's taking care of it. The only case Tosfos says when it says that we treat him like an artist was the case we mentioned yesterday where the guy to begin with, there was a rumor that he died, so he's taking care of the field. Now there's a rumor that he's coming back, and he goes ahead and does the harvest. And so we say he's Zodis Venisker. That's where Tosfos says that's where we would treat him like an artist, because the fact that he's doing it after he heard that the guy is coming back already.
So the Gemara says we do always treat him like an artist.
That's what Tosfos explains. That doesn't mean always. Most of the time we'll allow him to keep 100% of it. Only in
how
that specific.
That
because that's how they learn the Gemara. They have
but
a some. Yeah, that's Tosfos has it at some length over here. Okay, look, we could sit and learn the Tosfos in detail, but come on, we have enough ground to cover as it is. But that's how Tosfos learns. Anyway, okay, so we said v'kulam shaman lankaris v'kulam leisuyimai. What does this v'kulam come to include? What other cases are there? Leisuyi had the amr of Nachman amashvul. It comes to include the case that Reb Nachman told us in the name of Shmuel. Shavui shenishva. If you have a captive, you have a person who was taken captive, murdered in Korav on the chasav. You are fine. You allow a relative to start taking care of his property, which Tosfos says there's not really much of a chiddush in that. Shmuel said that already. It's an introduction to the next thing that he's going to say, because he continues, Yotz l'das ein murdered in Korav on the chasav. That, on the other hand, if he left voluntarily, then we don't, where there's no hurry, he could have had the time before he left to make arrangements, so he's going to take care of it. Ein murdered in Korav on the chasav, then we don't allow Korav to take care of his nechasav, because he himself obviously didn't bother with it, so therefore we shouldn't go against those wishes of his. That was Reb Nachman said in the name of Shmuel. However, Reb Nachman Dideom, or however, Reb Nachman on his own says differently. No, Bareah Hareu Keshavu. Somebody who runs away is like a captive, and therefore we apply the usual rules that a relative can go take care of it. So the question is, Bareah Machmas Mai. What is he running away? So the point is, the V'chulon of the Braisa comes to include that case. Not Reb Nachman is an Amora. Fine, he can't argue with the Braisa, but he can explain. He can argue with Shmuel. They're both Amoraim. The Braisa said V'chulon Shaman Lai. Yes. So he would say that the v'chulon of the Braisa comes to include not only the case of a person was captured, but also the case where a person ran away for reasons which we will talk about now. So we have to ask, Bereach Machmas Mai, what is he running away because of? Ilem Machmas Karga, because it makes a difference. Ilem Machmas Karga, is it he's running away because of, he's running away because of taxes. He doesn't have what to pay taxes, so therefore he runs away before the IRS comes after him. That amounts to ladas. There's no hurry over there. He has enough time before he leaves. That he has enough time before he leaves the pastures to make arrangements. And if he didn't make arrangements, why should we say that a korev should start taking care of his nechassim? Ella, no. We have to answer bereach machmas merodim. We have to say that we're talking about he's running away because of murder. He killed somebody, and therefore he has to run away for his life before the police catch up with him. Then he doesn't have the time to. Then he doesn't have the time to make arrangements. That's what Reb Nachman is saying. That in that case, we treat him like a shavui, and a relative can start managing his nechassim while he's away.
This shows that they were much softer on people who were tax cheats and murderers.
I guess
here,
that's true.
It's the same thing. Once the judgment is made, Police will come and arrest you if it's say you're bigger.
I guess, but the difference is that, well, that's why Rashi says, 27, that's why Rashi says, v'reach l'fnei boyazman. Rashi makes the point by the taxes, saying he runs away before the judgment. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But with murder, they're really going after him before the judgment.
Exactly.
Right, okay.
Okay. Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Shavui Shenishba, if you have a person who was taken captive, v'hiniach kamal likzer, now let's say there's stuff already ready to be harvested. All this time we're talking about how you're going to manage the field from year to year to just leave it from going fast, to prevent it from going fallow. Now we're talking about when he was captured or whatever happened, he ran away because of murder or whatever, there's already a harvest to be harvested. V'hiniach kamal likzer, so he left standing grain that's ready to be harvested. Anovim likzer, grapes that have to be picked. Tmorim ligder, zaysim limsaik, or dates, or olives. Each one, there was a different term in those days. There was a different term for the picking, for the harvesting of each one. In English, we would just say harvest all of them, but whatever. Basim yodin and chasav. What will happen is, like, basim will go down to his property. Umabidin apotropos. They will set up an apotropos, which is a trustee, a caretaker. That apotropos will be the one who arranges for the harvest of this this apotropos will be the one to supervise the harvest, right?
Arrange it and supervise it.
Not necessarily harvest it himself, but he'll be the one who arranges for workers and whatever. Yeah. The coats are boats of a gojo moisik. He does all the harvest. And then we will send a korov to start taking care of it long term, to start planting it for the following. We don't trust the karov to, but the point is that an apotropos in a way is a better situation because the apotropos is not getting paid. Rashi learns the apotropos is not getting paid for his work. He's just doing it basically out of the goodness of his heart because they didn't trust him. So the question is, v'loitim apotropos loylam. In that case, why don't you set up an apotropos permanently? Why have a karov go in where you have the, first of all, you have to set him up like an oris. Again, according to Rashi and the Rambam, he gets some percentage, and according to Tosfos, he gets 100%. Most of the time, and you always have the possibility that he may... According to Tosfos, he gets 100%. He doesn't have to reimburse, that's the point. There's only the specific one case that we said where he takes the last harvest while the owner is on his way back, then we say that he doesn't get 100% of it. Then we say he gets harvest. Whatever, the point is, why don't we set up an apotropos permanently? The answer is apotropos l'diknani l'imachminim. We do not set up an apotropos for old people. Diknani literally means people with beards, and it was mature people. Based in is not going to bother. They're not going to find it, Rashi says, because yisaimim, fine. If they start advertising, we need an apotropos to take care of nechasim of a yasim, fine, it's a mitzvah. People will be willing to volunteer for it. Nobody's going to be willing to volunteer to be an apotropos for an older person, where there's no specific mitzvah involved. So therefore, they're not going to bother. And actually, the Rishonim talk about what if a person does volunteer. There's a few different opinions. One is that in that case, fine, he volunteered, wonderful. But there's actually another way of looking at it. The Nemuka Yosef says, actually, no, because what if he's volunteering because he just wants to overwork the land? He wants to, you know, he's not going to take good care of it. So therefore, even a volunteer, you can't have an apotropos. Therefore, you have no choice but to arrange for somebody like an artist.
Now, somehow, we do trust the same pool of people to be an apotropos or children, you told him.
Yeah, because again, so the chidushim hamiyuchasim laharitva, the chidushim that used to be printed under the name of the ritva, only it turns out they're not from him, gives a different thing also. He says the difference is yisaimim, you know there's a certain limit to it. Eventually the yasim is going to become by mitzvah, whatever age, and then your term of service is over. This is an open-ended thing. The guy could be a shavui for a year, 2 years, 5 years. Therefore, you're not going to find people. You're not
going
to find people.
Become by mitzvah, they're going to say, oh man, you've been cheating us all this year. It's really...
No.
We have more...
Well, yeah, okay. We did learn in Dittin that there were rules about how based and supervisors the apotropos, sure. But whatever it is. So we don't bother. So Basin doesn't even bother looking for an apotropos for older people because they're not going to find anybody. They're not going to find anybody suitable. And even if they do, as the Nemuka Yosef says, he might be volunteering for it for nefarious purposes, and we can't allow that. Onward. Amar Rapuna. More rules about this business of bringing a korov to take care of a relative to take care of a captive's possession. We do not allow a katan to a minor to do this because he won't know how to take care of it properly. So even he's a korov, he's a relative, but still he won't know how to take proper care of it. Better we should get somebody unrelated, Rashi says.
How could a katan be?
He could be conceivably. He could be conceivably. Why not?
Be an aide? How can he be a...
Well, now, who says we need an aide? We don't need... We need somebody who's able to take care of the field, who's able to plow it and plant it and whatever, who's able...
That wants to have enough Patroclus for himself. It's his father, the shovel.
Right. No, we're not talking necessarily that he's the son of the shovel.
Oh,
we're talking
be,
about, for example, he could be a brother, let's say, of the shovel, whatever.
Okay.
So we don't allow a cotton. But like Kodev Lenixic cotton, we also don't allow a relative to go start taking care of a cotton's property. Suppose the cotton himself was taken captive, or not even taken captive. We'll have a case on a base, property that belongs to a cotton, where we'll see a case over there. We don't allow a Korev to take care of it, because that Korev may end up falsely claiming that he inherited that property, or not so much that he inherited directly from the cotton. What we mean is he may claim that it was my portion of the inheritance. That was my portion to begin with, right? And the cotton is not going to know to be Moshe. But like Korev, Machmas Korev L'Nichzei Cotton, we also don't allow a relative of a relative to take care of the nechasim of a cotton. So Rashi has an explanation over here that cotton that korev machmas korev means, for example, let's say this cotton has a brother from his father's side. That half brother of his has a half brother from his mother's side. So that other brother is not at all related to the first one. Nevertheless, you still have there could still be possibilities that he'll claim that he inherited it.
If he doesn't take a cotton, how would he take a cotton machmas
korev? Cotton, not cotton, korev machmas. The korev himself is an older person. The korev himself is an adult. But we don't allow him to take not only a korev, but even a korev machmas korev. Okay, the Ramban explains a little bit.
That's what I'm saying. If you don't take a korev, why should you take a korev?
Because a korev machmas korev. He's a little, he's a further relation. You might say this is far-fetched. It's a far-fetched case. And in fact, the Ramban says that actually the case we have here, the way we have it printed in front of us in Rashi, can't really be right, because two brothers from the same mother are never going to inherit the same property. So therefore, the Ramban changes. The Girsa evidently in Rashi must be a little bit off. But whatever, the point is, it comes out that you have, this is a half-brother of a half-brother, but still there is a possibility that he's able to claim that this property is not the property of the cotton who we're dealing with, who it really belongs to, but rather it's his half-brother's, and that half-brother is a half-brother of mine, and therefore, yeah. So, right. So, let's patch it out. We're not talking about people plotting together, but we're talking about the person himself. The person himself who's taking care of it may end up falsely claiming that it was his part of the Yerusha. You don't allow a cotton to take care of a shovel's property because he may ruin it. He's a kid. He doesn't know what he's doing. Sorry. What do we mean you don't allow a relative of a relative to take care of an accustom of a child? It means ba'achei me'ima. What? You're not a cotton. Good point. Yeah. Okay. But it means ba'achei me'ima. It means even... Brothers from the mother's side, like the scenario Rashi said. By the way, the Ramban has a somewhat more straightforward scenario. The Ramban says that the Korev Machmas Korev could be, for example, a nephew of this cotton. Nevertheless, okay, apparently he had a different Girsa in the Gemara over here. He didn't have Ma'achem, Ima, whatever, but it amounts to the same thing. He's not a direct heir, but he's an heir of an heir, and therefore there's a possibility.
It should be a good principle in business. We should apply this.
But like Korev L'Nichzei Cotton, and why don't we allow a Korev to take over the Nechasim of a cotton? Kivin B'Lei Machi, because since the cotton is not going to know to be Moshe, he's not going to know to protest, he's not going to know even necessarily that this property was his. Also, this person is going to end up making a Chazakah, and he'll be taking care of it for years, and then afterwards he may claim that it really was his all along. Omar Rava, so Rava says, in that case, Shmamina Minemid Rav Huna, in that case we can prove from what Rav Huna is saying, another din, in machzikin b'nichzei cotton, a chazaka in the nechasim of a cotton is not valid, meaning that if somebody was taking care of property of a cotton, even for 3 years, we still don't consider that a valid chazaka. V'afilu higzil, even if the cotton is already older. Now, Rashi says that means, even let's say, for example, that let's say this person started taking care of the property while the kid was a cotton, while the owner was a cotton. Later on, he continues taking care of it for 3 years after the cotton became a gadol. So he's still taking care of it when the kid is now 16. We still say that's not considered a chazaka, because since he started out when the kid was a cotton, the kid may not know that this property belongs to him, and he won't know to make a macha. Therefore, you can't consider that a valid chazaka. The Rambam, by the way, differs with that. The Rambam explains differently that if there was chazaka of 3 years once the cotton became a gadol, the Rambam says it is a valid chazaka. Because once the kid is 13, he's old enough to start finding out what the situation is and to make a machah. Therefore, the Rambam understands our Gemara to be saying, let's say, for example, he did 1 year before the Bar Mitzvah and 2 years after it, so now the kid is 15, that's not enough to constitute a chazaka. Because one part, you need 3 years afterwards for it to be.
So used to him.
Doesn't matter, he's so used to it. The Rambam would hold that the cotton at some point is going to find out. Okay.
That's not the halacha.
That is halacha, according to the Rambam, that's halacha.
Well,
No, but the chiddush is the fact. Fine, but that's okay. But that's the point. In other words, that chazaka on a cotton is not yet. The point is, how do we get that from Rav Huna's din? Because you're allowing a non-relative to take care of the nechasim of a cotton. You say you don't want a relative because he may falsely claim. What about this non-relative? After many years, he may claim that he has chazak on it. That shows that we wouldn't accept his claim. Yeah. However, the Gemara says, "V'loyam moran ela b'acheid abba." This only applies though if it was a brother from his father's side, because then or his uncle or whatever, because then he could falsely claim that he inherited it. But let's say, for example, it was a brother on his mother's side, less one brother, and it wouldn't be a problem because there's no way that the children of the same mother, the only property they can inherit jointly would be nichsim lug, that were hers originally. They're not going to inherit property from the father because they have different fathers. Therefore, there wouldn't be an issue. And even if it's a brother from the father's side, also we only said there's a problem. Only when it comes to land. Ababasi less one brother. When it comes to houses, then there's no problem. Rashi says because houses, the neighbors are going to know this house belongs to the cousin. They're going to know to keep it straight. So even after many years, this guy claims I have a chazak on it. The neighbors will be able to come and give aiders. No, this house was originally given
so
to this cousin.
So let me say, the family, the neighbors, that doesn't work.
I don't know. Well, they might not be possible aiders. Fine. Okay. Fair enough. Okay. So we're talking about non-relatives.
Non-relatives.
Okay, fair enough. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess.
Well,
I mean, there's other explanations anyway why houses are different, but Furthermore, even when we're talking about land, we're only talking about if there was no shtar of division made in the first place. When they first divided up the estate, they didn't write out a shtar who's getting what. But if they made such a shtar, then a shtar kola islay, then a shtar has a coil. Therefore, again, we can assume the shtar doesn't have to say necessarily who got what exact piece of land or whatever. All it has to say is this person got 25% and that person got 30% or whatever. That'll be enough because such a thing has a coil, and therefore it'll be known that this child got 25 or whatever it is percent of the nechasim, and therefore we'll know to keep an eye out if somebody falsely claims a chazak on it. However, the Gemara says v'loihi, but actually that's not so. These distinctions that we just said are not really valid. La'alacha loishna achei da'aba v'loishna achei d'ima. Doesn't matter whether the person taking care of the property is a brother from the father's side or from the mother's side, because even a brother from the mother's side could still falsely claim that this was nichsim alug, and now my stepfather, the father of this cotton, had a chazaka in it because he had payers. He died before my mother, so he didn't yaushin it. So I'm yaushining it, half of it, because of my mother. We don't want that, Rashi says. Loishna aras of loishna bati. Doesn't matter whether it's fields or houses. Loishna ovid itta, loishna loy ovid itta. Doesn't matter whether there was a shtar chaloka or not. Loy machsinin, we never allow a relative. Even a shtar chaluka, we still don't allow. Tosfos says because even though it's true, usually a shtar has a coil, nevertheless, when it comes to safeguarding the interests of Yisoimim, we want to be extra careful. What if this particular shtar didn't have a coil? Therefore, we have to do on that basis. The Rambam says for another reason anyway, because the shtar may get lost over time. Okay, but in other words, again, normally we wouldn't worry about that. Fine, normally the guy will be a kind of shtar or whatever, but here, again, we were dealing with your son, and you got to be extra careful. Okay.
But any shtar can get lost.
Any shtar can get lost, fine, but in a case like this involving your son, you have to be extra careful. So therefore, that's it. We do not allow any relative of this cotton to start taking care of his property. So now the Gemara is going to bring a couple of cases.
So what does that happen? The apotropos?
So no, it means that if the cotton has an apotropos, sure, the apotropos is taking care of it. If the cotton does not have an apotropos, then we'll have to arrange for somebody, for a non-relative, to go and start taking care of it as an oris, as we said before. Yeah. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to bring a case that bears on these dinim. Hahi Savta, there was this old lady, Dehadla Tlas Benas, so she had three daughters. She and one of the daughters were taken captive. And as far as Idach Tauti Benosa, and then there were two remaining daughters who still remain back at home, one of them passed away, Veshavka Yenuka, and she left over a child. So now you have as follows. The players in the thing are as follows. You have the grandmother. You have one of the daughters who's captive. Now remember, the grandmother and the granddaughter, and the daughter, we have no way of knowing at this point whether they're alive or dead. We have the son, the grandson, and we have his aunt, who's living there also.
Who's also the daughter.
Amar Abaya, Hechi Mevid. Now, what are we supposed to do as far as this property? What should we do? We don't know whether this old lady is alive or dead. Should we say that we fine. The halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel, but and like Shmuel, that fine. We can allow a kohen to take care of the nechasim or shavui. So should we let the aunt, the sister who's still back home, should we have her start taking care of the property? Can't. Duma shchiva sabta. What if the old lady has passed away and now the grandson is inheriting 1/3 of the property because through his mother, because his mother would have been the one to inherit it, and now he gets it from her. The ein meridin kohen the nechse cotton. And you, as we just said, you can't allow a relative, in this case an aunt, to take care of the nechasim of a cousin. On the other hand, nikminu l'nichsi b'yadadi nukra. On the other hand, are we going to say that it's a catch-22 kind of.
Yeah.
Are we going to allow the cousin to take care of the nechasim? And actually, it actually says not really the whole nechasim. Okay, maybe only half of it, because he sure doesn't own more than half, but still, whatever. Should we allow the cotton to take care of any part of it? Why? What if the old lady is not dead? The whole nechasim still belongs to her. And we have Rav Huna's other din that you can't allow a cotton to take care of the nechasim of a shavuot. So what do? We're stuck. Okay, Tosfos deals a little bit with the question. In general, we assume a person has a chazaka of being alive. Why are we talking about the possibility that the old lady or her daughter or whatever might be dead? So Tosfos brings up a couple of possibilities. First of all, it might be... The very end of the Tosfos, one of the answers is that a shavui is different. They get tortured or whatever. There's lots of a chazaka, there's lots of a cheskes chayim with them. And Tosfos gives other answers that in some cases, like for example, by a get will be makel, but here again because of the dealing with yisaimim, then we have to be machmir in every possible way. Yeah. Okay. So what do we do? I'm an Abaya. So Abaya says, hey, well, we're the Beis Din. We, Abaya, are saying, what are we going to do over here? He's part of the Beis Din. I'm an Abaya. Therefore, what we do is as follows. Palga, you have it, and it's not Palga. I skipped a few lines over here. I'm right. Palga, you have it, and half of the Nechasim, we allow the surviving sister to take care of, because no matter what, if the two ladies who were taken captive are dead, then fine, there's only two heirs, her and her dead sister, who now her grandson, or her nephew, so therefore she's gonna half of it.
Transfer it to her?
Means we have her take care of it as an oris, like we said before, that she gets a percentage or whatever. So she, a half, because regardless, if the old lady is still alive, sure, her daughter is allowed to take care of the property. The old lady is not a cotton. And if the old lady and her daughter, who's in captivity with her, are dead, fine. This lady over here, this woman over here, is garrisoning half the property. So half of it she can start taking care of regardless. Idach palga. What about the other half? The idach palga. What about the other half? Mukmin and lapatrupali nuka. We arrange for an apatrupus to take care of it on behalf of the cotton.
Why it's half and half? Why isn't it a third, a third, a third?
Because at this point we don't know whether the other one who's in captivity is alive or dead or not. If she's dead, and she may have even died before her mother, then she forfeited her share, right?
Only two and two,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What
if she comes back? By the way,
if the two of them come back, then fine. It's still her nechasim. And then we just say, then it's all the old ladies. But fine.
So
it's being taken care of.
Back and they have to go and split it.
Yeah, then they, yeah.
What they could do is the aunt could take care of her. And then when she's done taking care of her, she could say, okay, now we're switching, and she could take care of that one.
Yeah, I don't think that would fly. I don't think that would fly because, again, part of it is nixit cotton. You can't allow an aunt to take care of nixit cotton because she may try to mess him up.
But they could switch back.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, so that's what we do. We set up an apotropos for the other hand. Rava says, no, migu de mukmin and apotropos lapalga. Once already we have to base and have to arrange for an apotropos for one half. Mukmin and apotropos leidach palga, then we should set up an apotropos for the other half also, even the half that for sure is going to belong to the aunt regardless. And again, it goes with Amar Aleph. We said that usually people won't agree to be an apotropos on behalf of older people. But here it's different. Once you have to have an apotropos for one half, he'll be more willing to do for the other half as well. Okay. The apotropos would be working for free, right? We learned in Gittin that, strictly speaking, an apotropos is allowed to take a certain amount of salary for what he needs for the expenses of taking care of the property or whatever. Which he doesn't get like an artist, like we said before. He doesn't get a 50%.
He gets a salary.
He gets sort of a salary, yeah. Not really a salary per se, but his expenses are covered. Yeah.
What about his time? He makes $10 an hour.
We learned to get, we didn't talk about his time, really. A person who's doing it as an apotropos, number one, he's doing it as a mitzvah, and number two, he has the benefit, the fact that based in trust him in an apotropos itself, it gives him a good name in the community.
Oh,
okay. Eventually, they heard that the old...
Right.
Yeah.
That's worth more than...
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. Good name, is yeah. Goodwill, as they call it in the accounting business. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Tosfos, by the way, points out, Tosfos points out that the apotropos actually is going to be treated like an artist. We are going to give him the percentage because
that's
Tosfos is learning. In other words, that we will give him like an artist. This is another example where Tosfos say ordinarily person who takes care of property gets 100%. Here we'll downgrade him to an artist, but he will get that because at least that's better than giving it to the sister where she's going to end up taking all of it. So at least an apotropos, he's going to get something out of it, but at least it'll safeguard the old lady's interest and also the child's interest better than having the end. That's what Tosfos learns. I don't know if that's the actual halacha. Eventually they heard that the old lady had passed away. So now the question is only what about the other daughter? They didn't know anything about that. What it means by shamu, by the way, the Rishonim say doesn't necessarily mean there were edim, but they talk about, does it mean that there were edim or does it just mean that there was a rumor? And I think actually the Ran says that it means there were actually edim.
There were edim.
Yeah. Okay, so now we know the property has to be divided, but we don't know. Shamu can mean from edim. Because it could be shamu they heard from edim, whatever. Anyway, the question is, so now we know that the property has to be divided, but is it being divided into two or three parts? So, Omer Abaya, in that case, Tilta Yavin El Achsa, one third we give to the surviving sister, because no matter what, she gets a third, no question. The Tilta Yavin El Yanuka, one third we give to the child, no question about that, because it's his property now, he inherited via his mother. Which, by the way, the Rishonim say, he being a child, he probably will still need an apotropos, unless he's an older child who knows how to take care of it himself. But the difference is, I think the Ritva says, the difference is that until an apotropos is set up, he's allowed to take care of it himself, as opposed to if it was still possibly his grandmother's, we wouldn't allow him to have anything to do with it at all. Okay. The Idach Til, so what about the remaining third, which might belong to the other sister who's in captivity, or maybe not, because she may have died. In that case, Yavin and Dankal Achsa, we give one-sixth, and then the half of that one-third, they split it in two. That remaining third, he split in two. Half of it goes to the sister, but not that she gets it outright, but rather she starts taking care of it as an artist. Because it may be hers if her sister is dead, but it may not be hers and she's taking care of it It's on behalf of her sister. Her sister is an adult. If her sister ever comes back, then the usual rules will apply. Her sister will be moichet. The Idach Danka...
Would you do that if it was land?
This is Danka we're talking about land.
We don't say that it's... She's going to use all the land for herself. And
no, that's the thing. We say one third of the land now belongs to her outright.
Yeah.
One sixth of it she's taken care of as a caretaker on behalf of her sister. Yeah.
Right.
The Idach Danka and the remaining sixth, Mukmin and Apotropa Leonoka, we set up an apotropos to take care of it on behalf of the child. And again, Rava Amma, Migur Demok, Apotropa Leonoka, once we're already setting up an apotropos for one sixth, then we set up an apotropos for the two sixths, for the whole one third. So it's true. The one third that's the sister is no question. It's the sister's. The third that's the child, no question. It's the child. But that whole one third, if we already need an apotropos for half, we'll set up an apotropos for the whole thing. Okay. Now, so that's that case. So now we see how we solve the issue. Now another case involving. Which the Gemara is going to end up bringing in this matter of shaman like artist, that a person who takes care of property on behalf of somebody who's not here now is considered like an artist. So the story is like this: Mori Bar Isaac. We met Mori Bar Isaac in the second parak. He was a rich landowner. We have a story over there. That's
like Isaac.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. It's probably a nickname for Isaac. Yeah. He was. We'll see soon. Yeah, he was an Alim. He was a tough guy. Yeah. Tosfos, by the way, there's a Tosfos in Yevamos, by the way, that mentions there may have been two Mori Bar Isaacs, because the story that we have here is in the times of Rav Chisda. The story that we had in the second parak at the beginning of Eila Matzias was in the times of Ravina and Ravashi. It was a couple of generations later, so maybe that there were two of them. Tosfos Tanoim Amiroyim argues maybe not, after all, you know, from when Rav Chisda passed away until Rav Ashi is a young Talmid Chacham, could have only been like 40 or 50 years. He could have been like 20 at the time of the story and 70 at the time of that story. So whatever, it's possible. Okay. Yeah. So, Osalei Acha miBeichazoi, a person claiming to be his brother, came to him from Beichazoi. Beichazoi is an area nowadays in Iran. It's far away from Babel. The point is, what happens, Rashi says, his father, Isaac, had previously lived in Babel. At some point, Isaac moved to Beichazoi. He married over there, remarried. I guess his first wife died or divorced or whatever. He remarried over there. She had, his new wife had a son over there in Beichazoi. Mori himself eventually returned to Babel, took over his father. His father passed away. He returned to Babel, took over his father's properties over there. This other child stayed in Beichazoi until now he's coming to Babel and demanding his share. Amalei Ploigli, and this brother says, give me my portion. Amalei Lo Yadaynalach. So Mori Barisik says, I don't recognize you. Also, Kameh de Rav Chisda, so they came to Rav Chisda for Din Torah. Amalei, and he tells him, Shapir Kamalach. Actually, Mori Barisik has a good point. He has a valid reason to say that he doesn't recognize you. Meaning, in other words, Mephoshim say, the vote is, the way Rashi explained the scenario, that Mori Barisik himself had lived in Beichazoi, he had seen this kid at some point. It's not like he never saw him in his life before. It's not like his father had gone there and Mori had stayed behind in Babel all this time and he never saw him. He saw him. He saw him as a little kid. Now he's seeing him as an adult. Chenema, as the pasuk says, Vayakir Yosef as Echa Behem Lo Yikiru. Yosef recognized his brothers. They didn't recognize him. Melamed, which teaches us, Sheyotza Bolei Chassim HaZakin, that Yosef left them not wearing a beard. Ubava Chassim HaZakin. And now he came back wearing a beard, so they didn't recognize him. By the way, funny thing.
Not to forfeit his share.
Not enough to forfeit his share, but in other words, you're going to have to bring proof. By the way, before we continue, I'll tell you a funny thing one of the Mephoshim asked. You know, Rashi tells us in Parashas Vayeshev that Yosef looked like Yaakov. Zivikunin shalai doima. So what do you mean they didn't recognize Yosef? He looked exactly like Yaakov. You know what they answer?
It was much later.
So they answer like this. Yosef looked like what Yaakov did at that age. Yosef was 39 at the time.
Right.
The brothers weren't born when Yaakov, none of them were born when Yaakov was 39. Yaakov didn't even get married until he was 84. So they never saw Yaakov as a young man. They only saw him as an old man. Therefore, they didn't have a way to recognize him based on how Yosef looks at age 39. They couldn't recognize how their father looks when he's close to 100. Anyway, so therefore, by the same logic, Mori has a valid point that he may not recognize you.
Which one was older?
Mori was older. Mori was older.
So he didn't recognize him.
So he didn't recognize his younger brother.
Is almost a pircha because it's possible because he doesn't recognize him. Now he has a beard. Now he doesn't recognize him.
Yeah.
Just like Yosef.
That's the point. In other words, they didn't recognize Yosef, their younger brother, even though he recognized them because when he was sold, they already, most of them had beards. And even the ones who didn't yet, maybe Yisachar and Zvulun are young, fine, but once you recognize some of the group, you recognize the rest. We're not asking. We're saying, Rav Chisda is saying that Mori has a valid point. He says he doesn't recognize you. Doesn't mean he's a liar. It means Yitzhak doesn't recognize you. Amalei, so therefore Rav Chisda tells him, Zil Aisi Sadi Dachoya. Fine, go bring Edus that you are his brother.
Okay.
Yeah. Mind you, I mean, Tosfos says that even if Yotzeh B'Chassim HaZaken, just because a person comes and claims that he's his brother, doesn't mean that's not good enough. Otherwise, you know, Tosfos says, L'shap Yuzchai L'Choberia. Any rich person is always going to have people who are going to be coming and claiming, I'm your brother. So that Tosfos says the difference is, Tosfos says, because if Mori Bar Isaac had said, you're definitely not my brother, fine, then they would have no question. You don't have to bring in the case of Yosef. But Mori Bar Isaac is saying himself, I'm not sure. You could be my brother, it's true. I know I have a brother in Beichazoi. Maybe you're him, but maybe not. I'm not sure. Therefore, Rav Chisda is saying that Mori Bar Isaac is not contradicting you, fine. We can't throw out the case entirely, but you need Edus. Amalei, so the brother says, Isli Sadi, I do.
Even if he had been recognized, would that be enough? He wouldn't have to have Edus.
No, that's if he had recognized him, then yes. What do you mean, how? If he recognized him, Kahadaf Baldin Kamei Edim, sure. Amalei, so the brother says, Isli Sadi, I do have Edus. V'dachli Minei, however, they're afraid of him. D'gavra Alimahu, because he's a tough guy. Amalei Lidigay, so now Rav Chisda turns to Mori and tells him in that case, Zil Ant Aisi Sadi Dilaba Hoku. In that case, you're going to be responsible to bring Edus that this is not your brother. Meaning, Rashi says, either the very same Edim, how does this guy have Edim? The Edim, the pastors came with him from Beichazoi. So either you can, either of these Edim will have to testify that he's not, after all, your father's son, that they came with him from Beit Chazoy and he's an imposter, or find other Edim, whatever, find other Edim from Beit Chazoy, whatever it is, it's going to be your responsibility. Amalei, sort of, Mori asks him, Dina Hachi, what kind of a din is that? Amoitzim Mechavel of Araya. He wants to take away from me, he has to bring the Raya. Amalei, sort of, Chista tells him, Hachi, Danina Lachol, Lachol, Alimi de Chavra. Yes, but that's the kind of way I'm going to pass in for you or other tough people like you. People like you, who you're gonna try to terrorize the Edim and prevent them from saying Edus, then you're gonna be the one who has to bring responsibility. And that's the thing. Tosfos says again, we're not talking in an ordinary case where a person Stam comes and says he's his brother. Here he's saying, I have Edim, but they're afraid to testify. That's different. Okay, Amalei.
They're afraid of him.
Yeah, Amalei. So Mori says, so what good is it going to do if I try to talk to those Edim? Sof, also Sadi v'loy Masadi. So what's going to happen? Fine. You're saying bring these same Edus. They're going to come to Beis Din and they're not going to testify. They're going to testify in my favor. They're going to lie. In other words, so fine. You're saying that the Edim are going to be afraid of me. If they're coming and saying we don't want to testify out of fear of me, fine, that's one thing. But the way you're saying it, bring them, and then you have to prove that he's not your brother, means the only way is going to be if they're going to lie. So what good is it going to do for me to bring them to Beis Din? Amalei, Sir Chista tells them, Tautilei Abdi. Yes, but they're not going to do two Ameiras. They might, because they're afraid of you, they won't say anything. Fine, that's a Halba Ameira. They're not going to go so far. They won't say. They're not. But to go and say this is not your brother, just out of fear, they're not going to go so far. People know that it's a serious thing. People know it's a serious thing to testify falsely. To not say Eidos is one thing. They might excuse themselves. I'm afraid or whatever. But the other reporters actually learn a little differently than Rashi. They say that Tosfos actually says a little bit differently, and some other Rishonim as well. That what it means is Mela, they wouldn't come to Beis Din at all. That's one thing. But to come to Beis Din and then not speak up when they know already, Imla Yagid, not Saboino, that to hold back your Aegis when you're in Beis Din is, again, a pretty serious thing in the Torah, that they're not going to do. So you bring them to Beis Din, and then at that point we can expect, according to Rashi, that they'll tell the truth, or according to the other explanation, that they'll speak up rather than staying quiet. Lasoif also Sadi Dahur, who, sure enough, eventually Edim came that he is his brother. Okay, so that's established, he's his brother. Amalei, so now this brother says, in that case, I'm entitled, fine, we know I'm entitled to half the Nechassim, Liflig, Vinami, Mepaudis, Dil, Bustani, Deshassel. In that case, Mori should also have to give me half of the vineyards or of the vineyards or the orchards which he planted. Meaning, in other words, all this time we're talking about Nechassim that Isaac had left to Mori. Now we're talking about, what about Nechassim that were, the property itself had been inherited by Mori, but he improved it. He planted vines or trees or whatever over there. He improved it over the years. Now it's worth more. So he's arguing that I should get a half of that shvach as well. Yeah. Amalei, so Rav Chista tells him, Shapur Kamala. You know, this brother has a valid point. He's right. Tichnan, as we learn in a Mishnah in Baba Basra, Hiniach Bonim Gerlim Uktanim. The Mishnah says if a person dies and leaves behind older and younger children, Vishbichul Gerlim Asanachasim, and the older children improve the property, Hishbichul Emsa. Then the improvement goes to the common pool, meaning everybody shares in it.
How much of an improvement are we?
We're talking whatever improvement it is. Bechenom Rabbah Hishbichul Emsa, and Rabbah also said that it goes to the common pool that they all inherit it. Rashi says, by the way, what's the Chenom Rabbah? We're talking Rav Chista over here. Rabbah is Rav Chista's Talmud. Why does Rav Chista bring a proof from his Talmud for a Mishnah? So Rashi says maybe it should be instead of Rabbah, maybe it should be Rav. So, okay, Rav Chista is bringing a proof from his Rebbe, Rav, that it applies in all cases. Tosfos says not necessarily. You don't even need that. The Gemara may be interjecting these five words over here, interjecting in the middle of the story. By the way, you should know, not only such a case came to Rav Chista, a similar case in his time, the next generation came to Rabbah, and he passed in the same way. Amalei Abaya, so Abaya asked him, according to Rashi's understanding, it would have to be that Abaya asked Rav Chista. According to Tosfos' understanding, it would be that he asked Rabbah. Okay. So he asked him, me dummy, how can you compare it? In that case, the older children know that there are younger children, so therefore they know that they're moichel. When they put in improvements into the property, they know they're doing it on behalf of their younger brothers as well. So therefore you can say that it's hishbichel la'emsa, that it all goes to the common pool and they all share in it equally. How does he know that he should even be moichel? Now what I mean, how does he know? He knew he had a brother before. So different Mephoshim talk about, first of all, he knew that he had a brother who was little. He didn't know, this brother may have died over the years. Or another possibility, a couple of Mephoshim point out an interesting possibility, Mori may have figured, look, our father, Isaac, had property here in Babel. He also had property there in Bechazoy. My brother stayed over there. Mestama, he plans to take over everything that he left over there. I'll take over everything that's here in Babel, and that's that.
Why doesn't he go to the Bechazoy property and take
it? Yeah, he didn't want to schlep over there. I don't know. He didn't want to schlep over there. The Gemara mentions in a few places that it was a few months' trip. He could, conceivably. If he has to, he will. But
you drawn to Europe, did you know you...
Yes.
Your father had property over there?
Whatever. Okay. Come on. Okay. So then Abaye is asking in that case, how can you say that? Maurice, when he did these improvements,
yeah,
had his brother in mind.
Go and sell it.
Go, why didn't, who would go?
3 month trip, go to sell it, and then come back with more
if
money.
If he wants to do that, then he will. Okay, whatever.
Send his little brother.
No, okay. Eventually, this case became well known. People talked about it. Eventually, news of it reached Rab Ami in Eretz Yisrael. Amalahu, and he says, Actually, I can argue against Rav Chista's position because that was saying you prove it from that case in the Mishnah. Because no, Gdoyla Mizu Omru, there's an even greater case that the Chachamim said. Shaman Lahem Karis, the case that we've been talking about all this time, Karis was taking care of Nichse Shavui. We said that all the time he's taking care of it, he gets treated like an Aris. So hashtididit, he gets a percentage. So over here, shouldn't we at least give him his portion? In other words, what is Rav Chista saying that he split it 50-50? At least Mari should be treated no worse than an artist. Again, according to Rashi's understanding, means that he should be getting an extra percentage above the 50%. And according to Tosfos, maybe even he should be getting 100%.
An artist, according to Rashi, is 60% plus?
An artist, according to Rashi, is... No, everybody agrees an artist gets a third, a quarter, whatever the local custom is. Rashi learns that Shaman Naim Ka'aris means this person who's taking care of the Nechassim of the Shavuot is going to be entitled every year to, let's say, 25% of the produce. The rest of it is going to have to be put. The rest of it is going to have to be sold, and the money is going to be set aside for this Shavuot to take. According to Tosfos, he gets 100% of it. There's only the one specific case, Mamash Mashin Ubayin, that he gets only a percentage. Whatever it is, so Rav Ami is saying, either way, however you learn, whether like Rashi or Tosfos, what is Rav Chista saying? That you split the Shvach exactly 50-50. At the very least, Mori has to get something more for the fact that he put work into it. Ahadrua Holakameh Rav Chista. So they brought back this case to Rav Chista. They brought back this point, this discussion, what Rav Ami said to Rav Chista. Amalahu, so Rav Chista says, Midami, how can you compare it? First of all, Hotham Birshus Nachis, Hachalab Birshus Nachis. In that case, the Korah went and started taking care of the property with the Rishus of Beis Din. Here, it wasn't with the Rishus of Beis Din. Mori did not check with Beis Din ahead of time before he started taking over his father's custom. Where again, he knew that he at one time he had a brother. He should have checked with Beis Din. What happened?
Wow.
What? How should I arrange it? In case, yeah.
And in our case, he checked.
In our case, he didn't check. That's the point. Therefore, you can't say. In this case, Mori Bach, right?
Mori
therefore, you can't. Therefore, you can't
but
treat him.
In the previous case,
he did.
He did.
Right. And furthermore, cotton. Anyway, this relative is a cotton. They admitted in Karev the next cotton. He said before, Karev can't be allowed. In other words, even if he had come to Beis Din to ask, they would have told him, you can't be taking care of it, at least the part
did
that may potentially...
Yeah,
we just said that he was a cotton at the time. Wait, we said, the whole point of the story was that when Mori Bar Isaac and him last saw each other, he was a cotton. Yeah.
When they saw each other,
when his father died. Wait. Rav Ami didn't realize that point either. One second. Let's finish. Okay. So therefore, he was a cotton at the time the father died. Mori should not, even if Mori had asked Beis Din, they would have told him, you can't, because you're a karev and you can't start taking care of property of a cotton. You're going to have to arrange for a third party to take care of it. There are some proportion, by the way, who say it's not really two different arguments, it's the ritual learned, it's one long argument. Beis Din would not have given you an appeal permission because he's a cotton. Adrul Kameh de Rabami, they brought back that answer to Rabami. Amalahu, he said, Lois Samur de Kamai de Kottenhu. Fine, they didn't tell me of the whole situation. They didn't, whoever told me of this sack of Rav Chista did not tell me that the kid was a cotton. That changes the whole equation. Yes, if he had been a gadol, then you could argue maybe like Rav Chista, maybe you could argue that you do like an artist. But since he was a cotton, that changes everything. Okay. That's it. So that was the maskana. Therefore, Mori is not entitled to any more than half of it, which was his share.
Even though it was at the time he was a cotton.
At the time when his father died,
when
the father died and the husband, brother was a cotton.
What was the other? What else was Mori borrowing?
So earlier in Eilat Matzias, it tells a story that one time three of the Chachamim, who was it, Rav Ashi, Amema, and Marzutra, visited his orchard, and his oris brought them fruit, and Marzutra didn't want to eat from it because he wasn't sure if the fruit really belonged. In Eilat Matzias, we had it a couple of weeks ago. Marzutra didn't want to eat from the fruit because he felt maybe the oris gave it to them without checking with Mori. Maybe it doesn't belong to him, maybe it belongs to Mori. Later on, Mori comes and sees them eating, and he says to the oris, why didn't you give them from the better fruit? And they say to the Marzutra, you know what, does that prove that he agrees to it? And Marzutra said, no, he only may have said that in order not to embarrass the Oris, but not necessarily because he really would have agreed to it to begin with.
Or it could have been sarcastic.
No. If there really is better food, the Gemara says there, it's not sarcastic. What? Here there really was better food.
What parak was that?
Eilam Matthias. It's near the beginning of Eilam Matthias.
Of this?
Andach HaPay. Yeah, in Ormus Echta.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I learned it. No. Okay,
there you go. That's why it's familiar. Okay. All right. Mishnah says, Hamafkid Peres Eitz HaChaver. If somebody deposits produce for safekeeping by somebody else, that person, when he returns him the produce, is going to deduct certain deductions for how much usually gets spoiled or eaten by mice or whatever. Now, the Gemara is going to explain what we're talking about, a specific case over here. We're talking about when he mixed it with his own fruit, with his own produce of the same kind, and we don't know how much he's not supposed to, but if he did. Wait, we'll see that in the Gemara. But the Mishnah is just going to tell us the amounts, and the Gemara will deal with the details. L'chitim ala oires, if it was wheat or oires, which oires is, most people translate oires as rice, but Rashi translates it over here with a word that means millet. This is the famous thing, by the way, why in Hilchot Brachos, why the Alter says we're not really sure what oires is, and therefore when we eat anything made out of rice, we have to say shakol on it. We have to make three brachos or say shakol, as the case may be, because
just
we can't be sure.
Because of this Rashi?
It's not only this, there's a few other places where there's a few other places where Rashi also does that. They say, by the way, a funny
also
thing.
Also brachos.
Yeah, also in brachos, yeah. So for them, tisha chatzoy kabim lakur, 9 half kabim, meaning 4.5 kabim per kur. Now there's 6 kabim in a saw. So there's 6 kabim in a saw. There's 30 saw in a kur. Therefore there's 180 kabim in a kur. 4.5 kabim out of 180 comes out then to 1/40.
A kur is about a bushel.
A kur is about 500 pounds, give or take, so it's more than a bushel. A saw maybe would be more like a bushel, yeah. Okay. So Tisha Chatzai Kavan Lakur. They say a funny thing, that as far as this business of whether odor means rice or not, they say the Vilna Goyim one time did an experiment with it. He took rice and he took millet and set them aside for a while to see whether they'll end up losing from their volume as much as the Mishnah says over there. The rice did, and therefore he concluded on that basis that rice really must be ordered. However, that doesn't really work so well because Mephoshim say, the Rambam says in Pirush HaMishnayos, the amount that the Mishnah is telling over here is only in Eretz Yisrael or places with a similar climate, not necessarily in other places in the world. It may be different amounts.
True.
And the Vilna Goyim lives in Lita, where the climate is nothing like Eretz Yisrael, yeah.
How can he not pay attention to the Rambam?
It's a good question. I don't know. But I guess he figured it's at least a somewhat proof. Okay, I don't know.
Right. They say he's a goy.
Yeah, he was a goy. No, come on.
No, that's what the Rabbi Chaver says. So the goy, they say he's a goy.
Okay, no, come on. Okay, come on.
Okay.
So
he was a
goy. Yeah. For barley and for doichan. So again, so Rashi translates doichan by a word that means in English it's a grain that's a grain similar to millet like buckwheat or panic or something like that, whatever. Again, the Alter Rebbe says doichan conceivably could be rice. Those are tisha kabim lakur, twice as much, 9 kabim per kur, so 1/20. Because they're more of them gets eaten or scattered or whatever. Yeah. For spelt or for flax seed, 3 seah per kur, which is 1/10. Hakol lefi amida, v'hakol lefi hazman. These amounts that we're mentioning is we do that, we rate it for each kur and for how much amount of time. Meaning, in other words, one kur over a year will be expected to lose, let's say, in the case of kursman and zera pishtan, the last thing we said, 1/10. If you keep it another year, it'll lose another 1/10 of what's left. And so forth. It'll keep going down year by year. And the same thing for each kur. If there's one kur, then it's going to be 3 sin, or it's going to be two kur, it's going to be 6 sa, and so forth. Amar Rav Yechem ben Nuri, but Rav Yechem ben Nuri says, why? Why should it be more, depending how many kurim there are? Why would the mice care? They eat, whether it's a lot or a little. Why should we assume that more of it, or do they eat the same amount? The Tosfos quotes from the Yerushalmi that says, the mice are Rishoyim. When they find a pile of grain, they don't just eat it themselves. They call all their friends to share with it. So the bigger the pile, the more mice are coming. They say, by the way, a funny verse on that. The Gemara mentions in Chulin that the Chasida, which is the stork, is called that. It does kindness with its friends and shares its food with them. So they ask a famous question. So why is the Chasida called the Chasid, and here the Achbar is called the Rasha? The answer is the Chasida does it with its own food. The Achbar does it with somebody else's being Fruman Yenim Cheshbon. Yes. Okay. Okay. So these amounts that we're deducting can only be for one kur. You deposited two kur with him, you still only deduct three saw, let's say. Because we can't assume that the mice are going to eat more, says Rabbi Yechon Menuri. Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara points out that the Gemara is going to point out that the Chachamim answer him, it's not just mice you have to consider. There's also spoilage. No, there's also spoilage, there's also scattering, whatever. Yeah. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda says if it was a large measure, which the Gemara is going to explain that a large measure means 10 kur, so you're talking about 5,000 pounds, then you do not deduct anything when you return it to him, because they get larger. As we were learning in the Gemara, it expands in storage. So in other words, Tosfos explains, there's a few different mafoshim, what exactly that means. Tosfos explains that it means that it doesn't mean you don't deduct any of the deductions, Tosfos says. It just means when you have 10 kur, the amount that it expands in storage makes up for the loss of that would usually be for one kur. Therefore, instead of deducting as much as you would out of 10 korim, let's say, you would only deduct as if it was 9 korim. Mm-hmm. And similarly, Tosfos also says, by the way, that let's say you deposited less than a kur. Now, some of the Rishonim learn that if you deposit less than a kur, fine, you prorate it according to the amounts in our mission. You still do 20% or 10% or whatever it is. Tosfos says not necessarily, because less than a kur, the mice may eat much less of it because it's a small pile. They don't have much room to hide out in it. Therefore, they'll only eat a smaller amount. Orez, rice or millet, whatever it is, when you store it a lot more than the 1/40th, 2.5% that we mentioned in the Mishnah is lost over the course of a year. We're talking about peeled orez. So the peeled rice or peeled millet, whatever. So once the peels are gone, then much less of it deteriorates in storage.
The mice prefer it.
They eat the husks too, We gave an amount for flax seed. We said 10%. This is talking about flax seed that's still in the stalks or in the pods rather. Then because the pods dry up and blow away, then therefore you have a huge amount and all totaling 10% is lost. But if it's not in the pods, then it's much smaller. It's a much smaller amount that gets lost. Tani nami hachi. In fact, we learn like that in a braisa. Lekus min alozera pishtin begibolim for spelt and for flax seed in the pods. Or laodas shein a kolof or for unpeeled rice. All of them are shloshesi in the kur. All of them is the same 10% because of the peels and the pods and whatever. We said that the Mishnah says this is all according to the measure and according to the time. Tana, we learn in a braisa, what it means is kein l'chol kur v'kur v'chein l'chol shana v'shana. We do these amounts for every kur and for every year. Again, meaning, in other words, the amounts that the Mishnah mentioned, if it was two kurim, you double them. If it was three kurim, you triple them, etc. And similarly, if it was one kur for 3 years, then you're going to have, let's say it's going to lose 10% the first year, 10% of the remaining for the second year, 10% of the remaining for the third year, We said, Amr Abyechim and Nuri, Cholin. Abyechim and Nuri argues that, he says the mice are going to eat the same amount either way. Tani, we learn in a bright, so Amr Lele Abyechim, and they said to Abyechim, and true, but have it, or if it's Mehen, have him as Spazrus Mehen. But you also have to consider that a lot of it gets lost, meaning rotted, a lot of it gets scattered. You have to consider that also. That tactic happens proportionately depending on the amount. Tani, we learn in a bright, so but Men Varam Amurim, when is all this talking about, all these amounts that we said in the Mishnah? If the shomer mixed them together with his own produce, he's not supposed to do that. But let's say he did. But if he set aside a specific corner where the picardin is being kept, then there's no specific amount. Then he just says whatever is here is yours, regardless. We learned in the previous Mishnah that Rav Shimon Gamliel says and even the Chachamim agree. We said that if it's rotting at more than a normal rate, then he's responsible for selling it.
And then overall Pesach and Harishon Chavos Anecha.
That's a different case, right? that's a different thing. But
also, then if the person steals from him, he's chayav to pay the ganav, right?
Because
he could have used it. He could have used it to say Harishon Chavos Anecha.
Yeah, yeah.
The funny.
Okay, but over here it's the other way around. Let's say, for example, at the end of the year, instead of losing 10%, let's say the stuff that should, that you would expect to lose 10% has only lost 5%. You can't say, well, I'm entitled to take 10% deduction, therefore I only have to return you 90%. Nope, Harei Shalach Panacha, you give him whatever is it. Okay, the question is, so what if he mixed it with his own produce? Less of the day, Kamahavian. Let him figure out how much of his own produce was there in the first place. Then you add how much was deposited with him, and therefore you know to subtract.
They don't degrade at the same rate.
We agree. We assume that it would all degrade at the same rate.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's what we assume, yeah.
Right.
The answer is the Mistapit man, but we're talking about where he uses some of his produce over time. Okay, the question is, the Lexikami Mistapit, after he mixed it up, yeah. The Lexikami Mistapit, fine, let him check, let him figure out how much he used. The answer is, Delayabi Kami Mistapit, fine, he doesn't know how much he used.
He doesn't use recipes.
He doesn't, yeah, whatever. So he started out with a pile of his own, which was, let's say, 3 kor. Right. He deposited this guy 2 kor with it, fine, so now you have 5. Over time, he used it. He didn't measure it. He didn't measure exactly how much he gets each time. Now, at the end, he doesn't know how much, he doesn't know proportionally, so therefore, we have to figure he has to return the guy his full 3 kor, or his full 2 kor, minus the amount that he said in the Mishnah. That's the case. Rabbi Yehuda Eimim Ha'isachol, we said that Rabbi Yehuda says if it was a midah meruba, then you don't deduct anything. So, kama midah meruba, what's considered a midah meruba, what's considered a large amount? 10 kor.
How much would that be?
10 kor. A kor is about 500 pounds, so 10 kor would be about 500
pounds.
About. Well, it's really the volume of 500 pounds, really. So, and what it would actually weigh as far as wheat, I don't know. Whatever, it's a good
about
few hundred pounds. Yeah, something like that.
5,000?
Yeah. That's how much 10 kor would be, yeah. Tani Nami Hoche, we learned similar in the Rice, a Kamimid of Ruba, Asor Kurin. Tani Tana Kamed of Nachman. A Tana taught a Bryce in front of Rav Nachman that went like this. When are we talking about these deductions? If he measured out originally when the person deposited the produce with him, he deposited it, he measured it from his barn. Now, the thing is, they used to have in those days 2 different types of measurements that both had the same name. Let's say a saw, for example. They had a barn saw and they had a household saw.
Okay.
One was usually one was the barn saw was bigger than the house saw.
Right.
So
and
therefore, a UK gallon and a US gallon. Yeah. Okay.
Really, they have a UK gallon.
Yeah.
Sure,
gallon comes
from the
whatever.
UK.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So the Braisa said, when is this talking about that you deduct if he measured from the garden using the larger measure from the garden? The hechsel and the test garden. And when he returned it, he also measured using the saw from the garden. But if he measured out to him using the larger measurements from the barn, from the silo, really, whatever, and he returned to him with the smaller measurements from the house, then you don't deduct anything because then you have an extra. However, Amalei, Rav Nachman says that price can't be right. Are we talking about foolish people over here? They'll give it out with a large measure and take back with a small measure. What's the logic? In other words, I deposited by you 10 UK gallons, and I'm going to get back only 10 US gallons, or smaller. Nobody's going to do like that.
How big is a UK gallon?
It's about ten pints. It's about 10 pints instead of 8 in an American one.
Oh, okay.
Whatever. The point is, You're not going to have the person who's going to deposit 10 large stuff and be willing to take back 10 small stuff.
Well, what's the difference? Isn't it many times bigger, a large stuff than a small stuff?
No, it's some percentage
little,
bigger, but whatever it is.
Whatever it is, 1% bigger.
Okay, I don't know.
You don't say bananas and measure them with oranges.
Right? Dilma be moist in time. So therefore, if Nachman says to the Tana, okay, not necessarily is your price wrong, but we have to explain it. Maybe it's not talking about the actual measurement tools that are used, but rather the time of year. There's a time of year when the grain is in the silo, and there's a time of year when it's brought to the house. When are we talking about the deductions in the Mishnah? Is if he gave it to him for safekeeping at the time of the silo, namely after they've been drying out in the fields throughout the summer and now they're being brought into the silo, Sukkot time, when now they're dried out. They're smaller in volume. But if he measured out for him to give it to him for safekeeping at the end of the summer when it's dried out, and he returned it to him during the winter when it swells up because it absorbs water from the rain, then you don't deduct anything because then they swell in volume it's not measurable, but okay, it makes up for the losses from mice and whatever. So you have to return him. In that case, you have to return him, let's say, 1 full kor as it's measured in the winter. Because you have to so that's the point. He gave you a, no. He gave you a quart. He gave you a quart of wheat at the end of the summer,
right,
when each grain is very small in volume, is dry and very small in volume.
Right.
You return it, or if you return it to him during the summer as well, you could deduct the amount it says in the Mishnah, because you assume that mice ate and it scattered and whatever. But if you return it to him during the winter, where each grain is larger, then therefore you have to measure him out a complete quart. That means, what about the fact that some of his will have gotten lost or eaten or whatever, but the fact that each grain swells up in size makes up for that. So you're still measuring him out a full to the top of the core measure.
Why can't you take a summer core, put some water on it, and measure the weight?
Okay, that's basic, because you don't know how much it absorbs or whatever. We assume that it absorbs.
But let's say you have rice, and you have, let's say, 1,000 grains. If you put it in the summer, or if you put it in 1,000 grains in the winter, it's like a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
And you cook it, you get the same volume after you cook it.
Okay.
And boil it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Indeed.
So they're ignoring that.
No, yeah, because we're not talking about, you have to return what you were given.
Okay.
Okay, new.
Dry grain,
then
you put it in water.
Okay, new, come on. Yeah. If you soak it in water, that's different. We're not talking about soaked in water. We're talking about it absorbs a certain amount of air.
That's really how you gave me this much, and then he soaked it in water. And
yeah,
no,
come
no,
on.
No,
no, we're not talking about that. We're talking about it absorbs a certain amount.
In a humid environment and see how much weight it absorbs.
Fine, okay, but that's what we're figuring. We're figuring that does, yeah. Okay. Omale to papa la baya, however, to papa act the baya, if that's what you're telling me, that it swells up so much during the winter because it absorbs moisture from the atmosphere, in came with kakada. In that case, by that logic, if you store grain in a jar, for example, as people used to do in those days, you would expect the jar to explode from the pressure. Yeah. And in fact, the Gemara says, Hava Ogdo Apokakada. It taka did happen one time that the jar taka broke. So you see, it does happen. Or you could say, generally, why doesn't it? Mishum Itza, because usually it's packed very tightly together in there. When it's packed so tightly, it can't really absorb much moisture from the air, therefore it doesn't swell up so much.
Oh. It's funny, because we're very coming close to, with this example, they could have put it in a box and that was not so tight, and the box put in a humid area.
Well, that's what we're saying, that we assume that over time it expands. Yeah. Okay, let's go on. Mishnah says, continuing on this topic of how much you deduct, before the previous Mishnah talked about solids, now we're going to talk about liquids. Yotzi l'shtus l'yayin, you can deduct 1/6 when it comes to wine. Same idea, a person was making wine with you, shtus means a sixth, l'yayin for wine. Same idea, somebody deposited with you X amount of wine, you mixed it with your own wine, you don't know how much, etc. When you're returning it to him, you're entitled to deduct 1/6. Partly because the barrel absorbed, we'll see. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a choymer. Rabbi Yehuda says 1/5.
The mice drink the wine.
No. You can also deduct 3 lugin per 100 of oil, so 3%. What does that 3% consist of? 1.5 lug of that consists of the dregs, the stuff at the bottom of the barrel, the pieces of olive that are in there. And 1/2 is bela, is what the barrel absorbs. However, if the person, when he deposited the oil was used to begin with, it was purified oil, so already all the dregs that had fallen out of it, had precipitated out of it, and you can't deduct on behalf of the shmarim because there weren't any. And if they were old barrels, which already absorbed a lot, any yotzilei bela, then you can't deduct for absorption because they already absorbed. Which, by the way, the Taz in Hilchos Tarovus, in Hilchos Vasa V'Cholav, rather, says, doesn't mean they don't absorb. Because in that case, how does the whole thing of absorbing when it comes to Tarifus and Kafirus work? It means it absorbs, but it also gives out again what
it absorbs the smell.
That the point is, in other words, like this. If you have, let's say, so by this logic, if we're saying that an old barrel doesn't absorb, why can't you say, for example, why can't you cook kosher food in an old Tarifus pot? Because the logic is, it doesn't. What we say it doesn't absorb means there's no net loss because of absorption. Some of it gets absorbed. Whatever was in there before gets pushed out, gets exuded out. So the volume remains the same. So if it's a new barrel, you have absorption and nothing coming out. But if it's an old barrel, yeah, it's going back and forth over there. Yeah. Okay.
Who says that?
The Taz. Because not one time it's boileya, another time it's toilet, whatever. I did total mitzvah like bolas when you're kashering it.
That's
you're talking about different parts of the barrel, different parts of the keli
you
are absorbing
it.
Yeah, that's different parts of the barrel will be absorbing it.
Obviously, if it's metal, there's no absorbing.
There's still a certain amount of absorption, less than there would be with earthenware barrels, which is what we're talking about. I mean, if there's still some, that's why there's the dean of cashless with metal utensils as well. All right.
But when you let it cool down, then it
Rabbi Yehuda, Acha Moicha Shemen Mezuk Pachvera Kol Yemei Tashana. Rabbi Yehuda says basically the same thing that we say as far as Pekodin also applies to selling. Namely, when you sell purified oil for somebody else throughout the year, that person has to accept that I'm going to get 1.5 lug less per 100 because of the dregs. In other words, if I sell you 100 lug of pure oil, Rabbi Yehuda is saying I'm not obligated to give you 100 lug. I'm entitled to give you 98.5 and tell you that the remaining 1.5 is made up for by the leaves. We'll see in the Gemara the details. So the Gemara says, first of all, we had the Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda saying a sixth or a fifth, the loy pligi, they're not actually arguing, Marki Asre or Marki Asre, each one was going according to how it is in their area. But Asre de Mar Chofo Bekira, in the Tanakama's area, they used to coat the insides of the barrels with wax.
Where's that?
Wherever it was, someplace in Eretz Yisrael. The loy mayit tve, therefore it didn't absorb that much, therefore you have a 1/6. But Asre de Mar Chofo Bekufra, whereas in Rabbi Yehuda's area, they coated the insides of the barrel with tar, or mayit tve, and not absorbed much more. Or another possibility, the difference, Mishum Gargishta. The difference could be the actual material, the actual clay that they made the barrels out of. Gargishta is clay. Ha Maitse Tfei, Baholai Maitse Tfei, the clay they used in the Tanakama's area was not so absorbed. It was not so absorbent. The clay they used in Rabbi Yehuda's area was from a different type, of clay.
That's inside of it for wine.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that make it taste terrible?
It gave it a certain taste, yeah. They have even nowadays. Nowadays in Greece and other places like that, they still put wine in tar lined barrels, and it gives it a certain flavor. Look up sometimes Google sometimes retsina. It's called retsina. It's Greek wine. It has a certain tarry, pitchy taste to it. Okay, it's not to our taste, but apparently it's to their taste. I don't know. Okay, onward. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to tell us a case involving Rabbi Yehuda the Amora. Before we were talking about Rabbi Yehuda the Tana, now we're talking about Rabbi Yehuda the Amora, about one time when he was in the wine business, or Rabbi Hananel says he wasn't in the wine business, he's telling the wine sellers what to do, and we're going to analyze the business plan based on our mission. In Rabbi Yehuda's area, he lives in Pumbedissa, they had a measurement called a kuza, which is a small measurement, like a cup. 48 of them went into a barrel. A barrel consists of 48 kuzah. That was the standard. That was the measurement they had. Ozo dana b'shita. A full barrel of wine would sell for 6 zuzin at the time of the harvest, Rashi says. Horis Rabbi Yehuda shita b'zuzah. So Rabbi Yehuda was selling them. Rashi says that Rabbi Yehuda himself literally became a storekeeper and was selling them. Rabbi Hanano says he was telling the storekeepers what to do, whether he set the prices, whatever. Six kuz per zuz. So now let's analyze the business plan.
He was selling
6 kurs. Remember, 48 kurs go to a barrel. A full barrel would sell for 6. He's selling 6 kurs at a zuz, which means if he sold out the entire barrel, he'd be getting eight zuz if he sold it out piecemeal. So let's analyze. Dal plus and v'shisha v'shita. So let's start by subtracting 36 kurs that he sold for 6 each. So far, partial trace. Now, so far, it comes out as profit is equal to 12 kuz. Dal tmani shtutzi. Now, out of that, you have to subtract 8/6 because the Mishnah said that you have to that 1/6 of the wine gets absorbed by the barrel. So we have
8/6.
So in other words, there were eight. Like this, you have the barrel consisted of 48 kuz.
Yeah.
We're saying 1/6 of that gets absorbed by the barrel. Therefore, in other words, you started by pouring 48 kuz into the barrel. After you subtract what gets absorbed by the barrel, you're left with 40. He sold 36 of them. Because partial to Rabba means at this point his profit is 4 out of 48. He bought the barrel for 6 zuz. He's selling 6 kuzim per zuz. So he sells 36 zuz. At that point, he's made back his investment. He's made back his 6 zuz.
Yeah, right.
His profit consists of the remaining four kuzim.
Right.
The problem with that is, well, now, the Gemara could have answered that he was using old barrels where you don't have that. However, the Gemara doesn't answer it because when we continue analyzing, we'll see that it wouldn't work out mathematically. It said, yeah. Okay. The question is, didn't Shmuel say that when you're selling things that are needed for basic living, which wine was one of those things in those days, because they drank wine like we drink water or soda, what they had water, but the water wasn't always clean necessarily. Whatever they drank wine commonly. All you stack of Yosher al Shtus, you should not take more than 1/6 profit, but 1/6 you're allowed to take. So why is Rabbi Yehuda selling it in a way where he's only making 1/12 profit, 4 out of 48, when he could have sold it for more and he'd be making 8? He'd be making 8 profit out of 48. The answer is, there's not just the 4 kurs that are left. It could go for your shmaraya. You also have to factor in, there's the dregs, which are worth something. Go for your salary means the kankan, means the barrel itself is worth something. When he bought the barrel for 6 zuz, that included the actual barrel itself. He has the barrel now, that's worth something. Or shmaraya, and he has the shmarim, the dregs, which are worth something. We find in many places in Shas that what they used to do in those days is they would pour water on the dregs afterwards, and they could get like a weak kind of wine out of them. It's called temed.
That's the wine for the poor people.
Yeah. Okay. So now the question is, Yochin Nafish Let's Pay Mishnah. It's fine. In that case, then his profit comes out being more than 1/6 once you factor in those things. Because they knew how much a barrel was worth. They knew how much the shmar was worth. The answer is Ikat Tuche. But against that, you have to consider that there's a tucha. The fact that he's not selling it wholesale, the fact that he's selling it by retail, one cup by cup or whatever. Udmei Barzan Yosa, and also you have the cost of the Barzan Yosa. So Rashi says, what is Barzan Yosa? So Rashi says 2 girsos. The first girsos, so Rashi says, is Tarzan Yosa, with a cup, which is Meloshin Kruz, an announcement. He needs to pay somebody to advertise what he's selling. You need to have somebody calling out, Rav Yehuda has wine for sale. So you have to pay that person. Number 2 is Barzan Yosa, is Meloshin Berez. In modern Hebrew, Berez means a faucet. In the Gemara, it means something similar. You have to have somebody make a hole in the barrel to get the wine out. It's a skilled job. If you don't do it properly, the barrel is going to break. You need somebody who knows how to drill such a hole. You have to pay him. Once you consider all of that, then the profit comes out to be exactly 1/6. The Mishnah said, So the Mishnah said that if it was purified oil that he deposited by him, then you don't subtract for shmarim. The question is, why not? And we said that if it's an old barrel, then you don't subtract for bela for absorption. Why not? Well, you have to let bela. Still, it has to absorb something. Rav Nachman removes a puff in Shanu. So Rav Nachman says, yes, but we're talking about barrels over here that are coated with tar. Now, mizufafin means they're coated with tar. So Rashi explains, once they're old, new barrels that are coated with tar absorb a lot, we said on Amaral. But when it's old ones that absorb the tar...
New barrels with old tar.
Barrels with old tar. Once the barrel itself, old barrels with old tar. Barrels of any kind with new tar will absorb a lot. But once you have old tar, once it's already been used, then already it absorbs whatever it's going to, and again, it's not going to absorb anymore. Like the Taz says, it'll all balance out in the end. There are also Tosfos says another difference is there we're talking about wine, here we're talking about oil. Wine and oil are absorbed differently. Yes, okay. Abaya says you could even be talking about barrels that are not coated with tar. Given the tone, fine, but once they've absorbed whatever they're going to absorb, they're not going to absorb anymore. Therefore, again, if it was old barrels, you have no reason to deduct for that.
But he was saying that it absorbed and...
It absorbs and it exudes, whatever, but it's back and forth. The net amount still stays the same. We said that Rabbi Yehuda says that this rule by Pekadon also applies to selling. If you're selling purified oil anytime during the year, the buyer has to be willing to accept that he's going to have a deduction of 1.5 lug, which represents the dregs, because he doesn't want them, because he wants pure oil. Abaya says, if you analyze the opinion, it comes out that according to Rabbi Yehuda, if you sell oil to somebody else, now even if it's the time of year when you now like this, when oil is first made, it's full of dregs and everything because it hasn't settled yet. Eventually, you leave it in storage a while, and eventually the dregs settle out. That's the time when you usually sell shemen mezukah. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it comes out that any time during the year, you would be allowed to mix it back up and sell it to him with all the stuff mixed into it. The Devar Chachamim also out of Shmarim, whereas according to the Chachamim, it comes out once it's time of year, when it's settled out, you're not allowed to mix it back together yet.
Why is that?
Well, let's figure it out. The Devar of Yehuda Motel out of Shmarim. Behind her time, so therefore, that's why Rabbi Yehuda is saying you're allowed to deduct on behalf of the Shmarim. If you're not giving him the Shmarim, you're allowed to deduct it. Because the seller can say to the buyer, look, I would have had Rishus the Chachamim would have allowed me to mix it all together and then sell you. You bought 100 lug. You bought 100 lug. I would have had the right to mix it all together and give you it with the shmarim. But you don't want. You want pure oil. Hashtanami kabil. So fine. In this case, then you have to be willing to accept the same dreg. It's just they're settled out. Now you don't have to take the actual dregs themselves. But I'm entitled to deduct for you the volume that's taken up by them. Because I could have mixed them in if I wanted.
10%, I'm sending you 90%.
No, well, we said 1.5%. We said 1.5%. 1.5%. So therefore, I can give you. So therefore, I have. In other words, you can say you have two choices. You're buying from me 100 lug of oil. Your choices are: I can give you a full 100 lug, but it'll be mixed with the sediment, with the shmarim, or I can give you pure, but then you'll only get 98.5%. That's according to Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, the Gemara asks, "Valei malei." So why can't the buyer answer back? "I arvas lei have a mizdavenli." Fine, but the difference is, if you sold me oil that was mixed up with the dregs, I could have turned around and sold it to somebody else like that. Hashta my evidle. Now, what am I supposed to do with the dregs? L'chuder le mizdavenli. I can't sell dregs by themselves. And Tursus points out the case because nobody's going to buy dregs. Nobody's going to buy oil dregs by themselves.
Oil dregs.
Wine dregs you can use. You can make chemicals.
Oil dregs.
Yeah, oil dregs. What would you do with a lug and a half of oil dregs?
Not oil dregs, but if you have a clean barrel, you sell the barrel itself without the dregs.
We're not talking about that. We're talking about, he's saying that I'm selling you 100 lug of oil. I'm telling you I'm only going to give you 98.5 lug of oil. If you want the extra lug and a half, it's going to have to consist of shmarim. Why can't the guy answer back? The difference is that now, especially Tosfos says, we're talking about I'm using the oil piecemeal. I'm using the oil piecemeal, or I ate it, or whatever, so that at the end, all I'm going to have is left a lug and a half of dregs. What am I supposed to do with it? The answer is, Bavala Bayesah Skin and Nichalei Betzila. Yes, but we're not talking about you selling it to another merchant who plans to resell it. We're talking about you selling it to a Balabas, where he's buying it in order to eat it, and he would rather have clear oil. So therefore you can tell him, you don't want it with dregs. Fine, I'm subtracting a lug and a half for the dregs that you don't want. I'm not obligated to take that loss.
So a wholesaler, you would have to sell
him. Then you would have to sell him, Next, v'lei malei v'lei obviously achule achlesli. Fine, why don't we use a different argument? Why can't the buyer argue, okay, it's true, you could have mixed it up and sold me 100 lug of impure oil, but the fact that you didn't shows that you were moichel to me. Therefore, give me the...
What?
Yeah, well, we're talking about there was no...
The fact that he kept the shmarim in.
The fact that he kept the shmarim at the bottom of it. Yeah. In other words, you had the choice. Yes, you could have mixed it up before you sold it to me, but instead you did it. Yeah, you didn't just sell it. Yeah. So you didn't mix it in. Achlesli, evidently you were willing to be merchel, so give me the 400 lug. The answer is, Rabbi Yehuda l'taimei, d'les l'mechila. Rabbi Yehuda goes according to his shita, he does not hold of the concept of mechila in these kinds of things. Namely, d'tnan, as we learn in a Mishnah in Bava Basra, mochalei is a tzemed le'mochalei is a bakar. Suppose that you sell a person the yoke that's used to yoke a couple of animals together. But the tzemed means the yoke. Loi mochalei is a bakar, that does not automatically mean that you sold the actual oxen themselves. And vice versa, mochalei is a bakar le'mochalei is a tzemed. If you sell them the animals doesn't necessarily mean that you sold the tzemed, unless it was specified. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a hadam and medin, whereas Rabbi Yehuda says that you look at the actual amount of money that was paid, and that will tell you. Namely, Ketzad, Omalei mechorli tzimdecha b'masayim zuz. Suppose one person goes to another and says, sell me your tzemed for 200 zuz. Now, adav yadurashen tzemed masayim zuz. Everybody knows the yoke itself is not worth 200 zuz. Therefore, necessarily, it must mean that he meant the animals. And if the other person agreed to take 200 zuz for it, then it means he must have meant to sell him the animals as well. Bachamim en adamim raya, whereas the Chachamim say the money is not a proof, because maybe he was moichel, or in the Gemara over there. Yeah, and the Gemara mentions over there other possibilities. It may be, for example, this Lekeach at some previous time had stolen money from him. Now he wants to give it back to him. He doesn't want to outright say, I stole it and now I'm returning it. He's embarrassed. So he includes it. He gives him an extra for something that would be worth a lot less. Whatever. The point is, Rabbi Yehuda holds that you can't say Mechila. He pays 200 zuz. He's expecting to get the animals as well. By the same logic, therefore, Rabbi Yehuda would say, you didn't mix in the dregs. Fine. Doesn't mean that you were moichel on it. The fact that I'm selling you 100 lug and I'm able to mix in the dregs means that even if I didn't mix them in, I'm entitled to subtract them from the amount I'm giving you. The divrei chachamim also la'arav shmarim, whereas according to the chachamim, you're not allowed to mix in shmarim. Why? Behind a time of dilemma cabal. So therefore, why does the buyer not have to take the dregs? The omelet, because if you didn't mix them in. The omelet, because the buyer can tell him, he borrows la ruva mi habi sharlah. If you wanted to mix them in, the chachamim wouldn't allow you to. You have to give me it's the time of year when the oil is usually clear. You wouldn't have been allowed to mix it back up. Hashtanami lema kabilna. So therefore now also I'm not obligated to accept 1.5% less because of the shmarim that you anyway couldn't mix in. We'll go a few more lines. We won't go all the way to the Mishnah because it's getting late. But we'll at least finish with this thought. Amalei Rapapa Labaya. So Rapapa says to Abaya, though Adrabe Ipcha Mistabra. On the contrary, you should argue the other way around. You should argue that according to Yehuda, you're not allowed to mix it, and according to the Chachamim, you are allowed to mix it. Namely, you can argue as follows. So why would the Chachamim say you're not obligated when you're buying oil to accept the shmarim? Domalei, because the Chachamim would argue, like we said before, obviously, you didn't mix it, shows that you were meichel. Like what we said before, Rabbi Huda doesn't hold a mechila, the Chachamim do. And the divrei of Yehuda also la'arav shmarim, whereas according to Rabbi Huda, we could argue that maybe you can't mix the dregs together. The Heiner time of the Makabel, in that case, why do we force the buyer to accept 1.5% less on behalf of the Shmarim? Because like this, the Heiner time of the Makabel, the Amalei, because the seller can say like this, if I had wanted to mix it in and sell it to you as cloudy oil, I wouldn't have been allowed to. Kabuli le Makabels, and you're not willing to accept those dregs either. So what am I supposed to do? I have to make a profit somehow. Zabun b'zabin tagar ikri. It's like the expression goes that you say to a foolish person, you buy and you sell at the same price. Does that makes you a merchant? No, merchant implies that you make a profit. I have to be making a profit somehow, in other words. So therefore, you knew, in other words, Tosfos teaches it out.
What would you sell at the same price?
You're buying from me 100 lug. And I'm obligated to give you full 100 lug. And Tosfos says, we're talking about that he wasn't able to find anybody to buy it at any higher price than what he originally bought it for. So now, he says like this, I have to make a profit somehow. You yourself know that. Therefore, when you, L'chatchila, made the deal with me that you're going to get 100 lug, you knew that I have to make a profit somehow. Therefore, on that basis, I am going to only give you 98.5 lug of oil instead of the full 100 that we agreed on, because that'll make up for the fact that I'm keeping the dregs. You don't want them because you're a balabas and you want clear oil. And therefore, that'll be my profit. Because you know that I can't just buy it for $10 and sell it for $10 and be considered a merchant. And therefore, Sa'adarabah, according to that logic, Rabbi Yehuda would say, Yutaka not allowed to mix it in, but he's entitled to say, I'm deducting it because otherwise I got to make a profit somehow. Given that I can't mix it in, this is how I'm going to make my profit.
So you're saying that the mix is less expensive than the clear oil? Is that always?
Well, not really less expensive, but the point is, if you're a balabas and you're using the oil for cooking, for example, you don't want oil that has dregs in it. You want clear oil.
What's the deal?
You, the balabas, are not going to sit around and wait till it's separated.
Filter it. It's
not that easy, too, I don't think.
It's very easy to filter oil.
I don't know.
What is more expensive? With the shmarim or without the shmarim?
The shmarim aren't really worth much. The shmarim are just there as mixed in with the oil. Are they worth less than the oil?
Than the oil?
Yeah. So that's what we're saying. So again, if we say that you're allowed to mix it in, it means, put it this way, either way, it means, according to Rabbi Yehuda,
it's worth zero without the oil.
Yeah.
So why don't we say just, you know, there's 10% of shmarim.
The revach is that he's not selling 400 log of oil. He's selling 98.5.
Okay, so why don't we say...
He bought...
That's smart.
What? The 1.5 left is shmarim. Fine, but... Okay, but the point is, he didn't sell 400. He's still. Not necessarily are we saying the shmarim are worth nothing. The shmarim are just worth very little.
Less than oil.
They're worth a little bit because they're worth something because they can be used for fuel. They're just not worth for cooking and for whatever. Yeah.
Right. Well, why don't we just say, okay, tell me that with the shmarim, but well consider that there's, instead of 100 of pure oil, there's 98 or 98.
That's exactly what Rabbi Huda is saying. The Chachamim are disagreeing with him. The Chachamim are saying, you make a deal with somebody, you're selling them 100 lug of oil, you have to give them full 100 lug of oil without dregs, if we're talking the time of year when the dregs have usually settled. Whereas Rabbi Huda is saying, again, either on the basis of a bias shita, that Rabbi Huda would say you would have been allowed to mix it in, and therefore you're allowed to also instead deduct it, or according to the Papa's Svara the other way around. You're not allowed to mix it, but the guy can make a profit somehow. Therefore, he's entitled to give him only 98.5 lug. Whereas the Chachamim disagree with that. The Chachamim say that you're either according to the first lashon that you're not allowed to mix it, and therefore you have to say
pure oil.
Or according to the second Svara, you were allowed to mix it. Fine. If you mixed it, then that's it. You chose you're then fine. You can sell it that way. But if you didn't mix it, shows that you were moichel and you agreed to give him 400.
But if you mixed it, it's okay.
According to the Chachamim, according to the Papa Shita, it would be allowed. It would be okay. Yeah.
Not according to
the Yehuda. That's the thing. Abaye is arguing that according to the Chachamim, you're not allowed to mix it. And according to the Yehuda, you are.
Right.
And Rav Papa argues maybe the other way around. The halacha is, in fact, you're not allowed to mix it. Once it's the time of year, when it's clear oil, then you're not allowed to mix it in.